First, an announcement about our class schedule. This series is going to end on the second Sunday in January. That's the 14th of January. We'll go right through. That means this year we continue every Sunday. This is the 10th. We'll be here on the 17th, the 24th, the 31st, and the 7th and the 14th of January. Then there'll be a month recess. And we start again on the 11th of February, which is the second Sunday in February. We stop the second Sunday, that's the last class in January. We begin the second Sunday in February. Now, when we begin, well, there are only going to be seven classes. In other words, we go straight through the end of March. No seven will be a special seven. And that's going to be the termination of our work in San Francisco at the end of March. And so what we want to do now is to spend these five sessions and then those seven if we can together. And I think today's lesson, lifting up the eye, is probably the nature of all the work we will do until the end of March. Lifting up the eye. Now that is the title of the 11th chapter in Joel's book, Realization of Oneness. Lifting up the eye was given to the world by the master statement, I will give you the keys to the kingdom. And when we realize that this I he spoke of was not his person, not his human selfhood, but I, the Christ of you, will give you the keys to the kingdom, then we see that lifting up the I is learning to recognize divinity in yourself, in everyone you know, throughout the world. Now let's go back to a time when, as a girl, you hadn't yet worn high heels, or as a man, as a boy, you hadn't yet put on long pants. I know how girls are. They just can't wait for that first time that they can step into those high heels. And then one day it happens. Now when you are wearing those high heels, you're not wearing low ones. And usually, as you become more mature, that becomes the accepted way for the woman to dress, except when she's walking somewhere or shopping and that sort of thing. You don't turn back. When the man changes into his long trousers for the first time and then grows up, that's his way of life. He doesn't turn back. And similarly, in the spiritual work, when you turn to I, when you learn who I is, you learn that you cannot turn back. And this is hard. We want to turn back because there are so many pleasant memories in the world. But you cannot wear high heels and short heels at the same time. You cannot lift up the I and then turn around and honor the me. And so this is a commitment. As you learn to lift the I, you're pushed further and further. There comes a moment when you realize that mortality has got to be abandoned. And this may be that moment for all of us. There is a world consciousness now which is being shattered. Possibly typical of it is the way a magazine like Life can fold up. Certain things are happening, and they should be recognized. Life gave us reasons for folding up three. One, that it too much specialized competition, higher postal rates. I even forget the third one. But it didn't give the real reason. It didn't fold because of these reasons. It folded because the consciousness of the world is changing. And it hasn't kept pace. You can't just show a photograph of women's lib and think that is covering their needs. Or a photograph of the new activity at colleges and think that is covering their needs. The world consciousness keeps changing, and when a woman's liver looks at Life magazine, there's nothing in it for her anymore. When a person learning what life is really all about looks at Life magazine, it's just something for 10 minutes and then you throw it aside. The truth that sticks to your ribs isn't there. And so the magazine folds because, oh yes, advertising. It didn't have enough advertising. But the reason it didn't have enough advertising, the reason it likes to say postal rates put it out of business and the new era of specialization, is simply that it has not caught a way of fulfilling the need of mankind. We find that everywhere we're being forced to take a new inventory of our own consciousness. Things that at one moment seem so right, a moment later appear to be not quite as right. We're growing up spiritually, and we don't seem to know it. In this growth, we're learning that there is a divine self. And although this is not surfaced into the consciousness of everyone, this is the cause of much of the unrest that goes on in our world. The invisible nature of the divine self asserting itself on and through the human consciousness causes unrest. And it's wise for us to see that we have been given an invisible pathway out of this world. We were in a home the other night. The woman wanted to show us the hunting trophies of her husband. They had been very successful. She had been very successful too. They were both career people. But they're not together today. He passed on 5 years ago. And her statement was, they've got to do something about that disease. And the question is, what can anyone do about it? She who vehemently sought some way to find something to do about that disease would not even understand or recognize what has been taught to the world to do about it. As much as she desires to eliminate that disease, she's not prepared to do so when given the information on what she should do, because she does not know how to lift up the eye. The only way that disease and countless others are eliminated from this world are through an enlightened world consciousness, through spiritual understanding. That here where we stand there is an invisible realm, and that spiritual law cannot be ignored. Now, I don't know if this woman thought of where this particular disease came from that took her husband away, but I know one thing, and that is God did not create that disease. And I do know who created it. The universal consciousness created it. And we have allowed the universal consciousness to imprison us in these bodies that deteriorate and are subject to all forms of error by one word alone: infidelity. Our infidelity is to the divine self that we are. By not abiding in your divine self, you become a separated self. And in the not abiding, in the becoming separated, we lose all contact with the grace of God. So that without realizing it, we're really hanging on by a thread which we call a lifespan. And because Scripture tells us what to do, which is divine law, and we do not do it, we create the very diseases we try to avoid. Karma is the effect which comes about through mankind not abiding in divinity. And whoever in a measure abides in divinity, which is the eye of your being, the eye of everyone's being, you find you nullify the karma, the ignorance, the superstition, the false powers of the world. Now, right in this room, right now, there is an invisible thief. That's the carnal mind. It wasn't invited, but it's always present. And if you are not abiding in the divine self of you, it will steal you away into that realm which is not reality. And you will find yourself asleep, walking in a dream called mortality. And in that mortality you will suffer all those things that are not God created, which we call the destructive elements of this world. And only by abiding in your divine self do you step out of these destructive elements. When that becomes clear, we finally choose immortality as the nature of being. You cannot be divine self and mortal self. And to lift the eye, you begin peeling away all of the false, the conditioned, inherited concepts of the world consciousness. Scripture comes to your aid. Your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, or else you cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven, which is a very oriental way of saying, unless you abide in your divine self, you cannot experience the perfection of reality. The place whereon thou standest is the invisible realm, unseen to human eyes. And while you are not abiding in divinity, the thief functions through your senses, and your senses become a channel for the mirage. And that mirage is where every error and problem of this world is contained. And so we're beginning to face one important fact. To lift the eye out of mortal sense, out of human sense, out of the belief that there is good and that there is evil, to go beyond the voicing of truth. For the Father has told us that you must be reborn of the water and the Spirit, of the truth and the Spirit. And so we must go beyond truth as we know it humanly. We must leave the lulling pleasures of the senses, the lulling pleasures of matter, the lulling pleasures of the world. We must go beyond into the realm of spirit, out of the high heels, out of the long pants, out of the humanhood, and we must pass into the next realm of being. I will give you the keys to reality. You come face to face with I in the midst of you, and you are told, abide in I. and you will bear fruit richly. And the word abide says that doesn't mean part-time or halfway. You cannot abide in I while you're abiding in a mortal sense of life. To abide in I means to yield, to surrender, to make of yourself a living sacrifice. The Master set the tempo for us. I give my complete humanity as a living sacrifice. There is no mortal selfhood left as you learn to accept the I. Now, it would be foolhardy to look at the testimony of Jesus Christ and pretend to ourselves that he said less. We clearly see a total crucifixion made visible to human eyes so that even human eyes cannot deny it. There is no spiritual self and a material self. There is no immortal self and a mortal self. There is no permanent self and a temporary self. And you don't have to be a detective to know that the forms we inhabit are temporary selves. Right here, where the temporary self is, there is I, the permanent self. I, the self that existed before there was time and space, before there was a world, before there was a human being on the world. I, the self that will always exist. And we must lift the consciousness to know that this I am. This second that I am. When you live in your infinite I, consciously, you are nullifying every discord in the world. You are abiding. You are sowing to the I, the Spirit. Sowing and abiding are one and the same. If you sow to matter, if you believe in the existence of matter, though you be humanly righteous, though you be a philanthropist, though you be kind and merciful, though you be compassionate and cooperative, you must reach the place where you see that 100% human perfection is not acceptable to God. Your righteousness must exceed 100% human perfection. Otherwise, somebody will be looking at your trophies and wondering why you're not there to share them and enjoy them with them. There is no such thing as human perfection. It's as much a mirage as the good and the evil of the world. There is no good matter. There is no evil matter. There is only my Spirit, says the Father. And the I of you is the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God, which is your permanent self, is named I. And I, that Spirit, that permanent self which you are, is the key to the realm of this perfection, which is invisible everywhere on this earth. And so we're sowing, abiding in I. Abide in me, and you will bear fruit richly. Acknowledge me in all thy ways, and I will direct thy path. The Father taught that the first commandment is to acknowledge I. To acknowledge God in all your ways means to acknowledge the I of your being. as the self of you, and to recognize that you are that divine I, that divine life. And to abide means that because I am that divine I, that divine life, I accept no opposite and no substitute. I am the I which the world knows as God. That is my permanent self. And I have no temporary self. I have no self that is subject to material powers. I, the spiritual self, which is the self of God, which is otherwise known as the Father within, I am not subject to material powers. I am not subject to disease. I am not subject to death itself. I cannot be crucified. I cannot die or be sick. I cannot be hurt. I cannot be limited or lacking. I is your name. And to abide means that you cannot accept conditions which deny who you are. How can you hurt if your name is I? And therefore, what is this hurt? It is the mirage of the world mind. And it is using your senses as a channel for you to declare that you are not I. In every area of your human lifespan, by the sheer belief that you are a material being in a material world, you deny who you are. And this is the human separation from reality. Now, the habits that must be started to abide in I, to lift up the I, to sow to I, to acknowledge I, to realize that I and the Father are one and the same I, are very difficult habits to start, because that invisible thief in our midst is always working. And you can't find him. You can't draw a blueprint and put it on a piece of paper. You can't put a searchlight on this invisible thief. You can't padlock him. He's always present as a spur. And yet, unless you are aware that he is present, he will always outwit you. And so you accept the invisible presence of the world mind. You can give it any name you like. You can call it carnal mind, world mind, the glass darkly, the universal belief, the thief, the deceiver, Satan, the devil. But you must know that this invisible, universal mind of man is ever functioning, and all of the evils in the world and all of the good in the world are contained within it. God never made a volcano. The world mind makes volcanoes, and they are mirage. God never made poverty or famine. They're made in the world mind, and they are mirage. God never made a disease. They're made in the world mind, and they are mirage. God never made physicality. It's made in the world mind, and it is mirage. I, which existed forever and will exist forever, I am not in the world mind. And if you stand in I, you are out of the mirage. You are awakened out of the cosmic dream in the world mind. Only I can give you the keys to the kingdom. We learn to accept, my name is I. And all that I is, I am. The Father tells us, be still and know that I am God. Therefore, I is God, because the Father says so. And I is my name, because the Father says so. And I and the Father are one, because the Father says so. And that is who I am. I am I. The very self-same I that is the I of God. And when I am not abiding in this knowledge, I become a branch cut off. a separated branch, and I find myself vulnerable because I am living in a false state of myself. In that separation, the powers of the world to me are power, even though they are no power to I. I'm out of center. I'm in a false body, a false series of relationships, and a false world. I cannot control my own destiny. I am controlled by the world mind, the invisible thief. The moment I am separated from I, the invisible thief controls me and may even make me appear to be very successful and healthy, and then wipe it all away. And so I make a living sacrifice of this mortal me which was created in the world mind. That mortal me created by the world mind through birth is not I. My past is not a true past. All of the destructive elements in that past, all of the sin, all of the errors are untrue. They were world mind appearing as a me that wasn't me. They were world mind appearing as a mortal self, and there is none. For I is my name, I is your name, and there can be found no mortal being in I. I is the name of every individual you know. Divinity is the only self that is present. And only when you stand in that divinity do you render null and void the false powers of the world that use the senses and the mind as a channel through which they project those disturbances which ultimately lead to final death. The fact that it was done by the Master and taught to his disciples and practiced by those who secretly have studied the Word of Truth for centuries, the fact that a Joel Goldsmith appeared to preserve this truth in a record of 29 books and 900 tapes, and to demonstrate in his life that we can demonstrate it in our lives, is ample evidence that this is the way through which we move through the false world consciousness of death. We're learning to abolish disease and destruction and death in our lives. And we're being trained for a higher purpose. And I do believe that when we have finally completed our work here together, that many of us will be prepared to do successful world work. We will be independent of the false consciousness of the world. We will be able to move in divine rhythm, in an awareness of our divine body, our divine mind, our divine life, free of the tribulations of the world. Just to give you an idea of how we're being forced to it, there was a man phoned this morning about his cattle. Four fell dead. Some weeks back, two fell dead. By this time, he was becoming quite frantic. However, he couldn't tell what was wrong. It wasn't the frigidity of the air. There was some kind of an epidemic of some kind. He couldn't put his finger on it. In fact, he called me before he called the vet. I think he called from Nevada. I'm not sure. I don't know the man. But the point is that I learned that this man was studying our tapes. He's not a student of our class in the physical sense, but one of our students has been lending him some tapes. And so he was impressed with the possibilities that lay ahead for him. Simply hadn't yet reached that consciousness where his consciousness was the divine consciousness, so that his head of cattle could benefit by this awareness. Next problem is, suppose the other 150 head were contaminated. He'd be wiped out. Now that man is being forced by this invisible thief to come to a higher level of himself. If he didn't know about the infinite way work, he'd probably wonder, what in the world can he do about it? He knows there is a way. And I'm quite sure that he's going to find that way, because he's forced to. It's a matter of complete failure in business or success. And so he's forced to do it on a human level. What one advantage is his that isn't available to many others. He at least knows that there is a way. And now he'll be forced to find and cultivate the higher levels of that way. This is the karma of an individual who has been part of the world consciousness. And had he been 100% perfect humanly, it wouldn't have made any difference. The world consciousness plays no favorites. And if you've been pushed your back against the wall too, you find it's because knowing the way and not taking advantage of the way, but rather trying to live sort of midstream, riding two horses, you're being forced to accept that the only way is I, the divine self of you. There is no second way. Lot's wife couldn't turn back. When she did, she was through. Two will be on the field and one will be taken away. The mortal is taken away. The immortal remains. Finally, it's crystal clear. Immortality is the nature of being. There is no mortal on the face of the earth. There is only divine self. And whoever is able to abide in that consciously, day in and day out, discovers that I, my own divine self, makes me self-complete, self-fulfilling, independent of the conditions of the world. Now, what you are also tells you what you are not. Every quality of I is every quality of God. Son, all that I have is thine. I have all that God has because I am that I. Now, because I have all that God has, the opposite condition cannot be true. Although the opposite condition is what appears, it cannot be true. I have all that God has. That is the divine law. And your name is I. The I that you are has all that God has right now. Therefore, whatever denies it is a lie. If you live in the conscious acceptance that you are I, the Son, and that the Son, I, has all that the Father has, because the Father has said so, then you accept that here where I stand, all that God has, I have. And whatever God does not have, I cannot have. God does not have disease. I cannot have disease. God does not have poverty or famine. God does not have old age. God has nothing except perfection. Therefore, I have nothing except perfection. But the thief says, look at this. You cut your finger. The thief says, look, your tires are wearing thin. The thief says, look, you've got an old car. You need a new one. And you don't have the money to buy one. The thief says, your parents are suffering. The thief says, your children are on drugs. The thief says, everything except what God says. And the human mind, trained to believe at face value what it hears and sees, accepts the thief, which steals away your divinity. The enlightened one, however, can recognize the thief, for every expression of imperfection is a denial of your own being. Every expression of imperfection is a temptation to you to make you not abide in I, which is the key to the kingdom. So there's this little something in us now. We'll call it our consciousness. It's like a lawnmower. You've got these lawns of grass. Let's say the grass is 3 or 4 inches high, and you push the mower through the grass and you cut a swath. That swath depends upon the width of the mower, the sharpness of the blade, and so on. That is like your consciousness. Your consciousness cuts a swath through the invisible. And what it comes up with is what appears. The quality of that consciousness determines what expresses, what appears. If that consciousness is living in I, when it cuts its swath through the invisible, it expresses the qualities of I. And then in the visible you find, I am the peace. I am the wine. I am the water. I am the bread of life. I am the harmony. All that I am, thou art, because we are one and the same. And all that appears not to be what I am is mirage. The broken bone is mirage, and the bone that isn't broken is mirage. There is no good matter, there is no evil matter, there is only I, the invisible spirit. Absent from the mortal sense of life, we are living in the I. And daily, you pick that I up, 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 never letting it fall down. Five seconds from now, after you hear something, you will do what you've always done in spite of hearing it. When you are told to look at your neighbor and know that only divinity is there, you will do it. And 5 seconds later, you'll be seeing Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Jones again instead of divinity. But that's the thief in you who sees Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Jones. We must learn to look at divinity, not at the appearance called form. You see the form with the eye of your physical senses, but you see the invisible divinity with the eye of your immortal self, and that is the eye to cultivate. You can only greet a divine being. You must see divinity everywhere. You must abide in I. You cannot see humanhood anywhere and be abiding in I. It's an absolute point that the divine law says, abide in I. And so it's departing from the old habits. You must change. And the change is not partial. The change is total. This is the change which says, take off the garment of mortality, put on the robe of immortality. Do not try to patch up the old consciousness. Do not pour new wine into the old mind. It's a completely fresh start from a new focus, and it's a conscious, continuous awareness that I am I, divine self. Not living in a mortal form. I am that I which never knew physical birth. I am that I which can never know physical death. I am that I which is the Christ, which could be physically crucified on a tree without dying. That I am. I am the deathless I, the eye that is never sick, the eye that can never be hurt by man or beast. This is identity lived in, not for a minute or an hour or a day. A total change of consciousness. And as we live with it daily, abiding, rejecting all that denies it, we find we are never denying the presence of God anywhere. There is no place on heaven, in heaven, on earth, in the sky, or in the water, where God is absent. For I is the infinite I, and that infinite I is everywhere. In that infinite I that is everywhere, there is no evil. There is no disease. There is no matter. There is no mortality. There's no place to go except into I. If you do what comes naturally, you identify with people. You have four cattle that were killed. Your pipes break because of the frost. Your car breaks down. This is identifying, not I, not abiding. This is accepting the opposite. As you continue that which at first seems like a denial of obvious facts turns out to be a revelation of the nothingness of all error. It makes no difference what the error is. All material existence is the error. There's nothing you can do about it. It will continue to be the error. Any belief in the existence of matter is not abiding, for abiding means abide in spirit. If you believe in the existence of matter, you are breaking divine law. And if in your life appears a series of problems, that is the karma which you have accepted, which you have invited by your belief in the existence of material world. This is where we must now stand. You must know that if you choose to believe that matter exists, you are denying the allness of God, which is the spirit of the universe. There cannot be the allness of God and matter too. There is spirit or matter. And your life, your experience, depends on which you accept as truth. Allness of spirit, or spirit and matter, or just matter. If you're divided, your divided consciousness brings back both good and evil. If you're one with spirit, out of the divided consciousness, you find that all that comes back to you is that oneness with the Father which expresses His qualities in you. Finally, the decision is always yours. If you know the facts, and I think you should know the facts by now, you are making the decision about tomorrow. You're saying, my tomorrow will be with good and with evil. Or, my tomorrow will be perfect. And you're making that decision by whether or not this instant, and the next instant, and the next instant, you are accepting that only spirit exists, or you're accepting that there is spirit and matter. When you're single-pointed to the knowledge that only spirit exists, you're following the Master's teaching. And that's half the battle. The acceptance that only Spirit exists makes possible the development of ways and means and techniques to be true, faithful to the fact that only Spirit exists. That fidelity to spiritual identity enables you to look past the errors of human beings and to recognize that they are nothing but the invisible universal thief appearing. So the whole world is taken out of condemnation in your eyes. You don't have good and bad people anymore. You don't have good and bad children. You don't have good and bad anything. You can even know that four cattle were killed, and yet you can see this is the universal lie. Somehow out of that, good will show forth spiritually. You can't anticipate how. It may be that you're lifted higher and that will be the good. In one way or another, nothing has happened because that which God does is all that can happen. The self-crucifixion is the birthing of I in you. When you are birthed in I, rebirthed, you are returning to I that you ever were. This mortal self is now seen to be a shadow of thought. It's not a question of, don't I have a heart or a pair of lungs or ears? It's a question of who I am. I am divine spirit, and therefore I am not living in lungs and heartbeats. The change is total. I am being lived by the Spirit of God. Independent of the world of matter. And if the world of matter were to crucify this body, I would still be standing here. This must be the conscious knowledge that I can never die. I am the living Spirit of God. And in this knowledge, in your fidelity to it, in little things and big things, you begin to sense that there is a new law functioning in your whole being, a divine law, with divine action, with divine rhythm, with divine intelligence. The change of consciousness becomes the change of life. Now the habits you start then are very specific. If I am to obey that scriptural command which says, abide in me, I must know who me is. God says, abide in me. Well, God is spirit, and I must abide in spirit, and the name of spirit is I. I must know that I am I, and that's how I abide. And if I abide in I, that's who I am 24 hours a day. The old world ways will keep giving me a human name and a human description. But I am to be faithful to the Father. And so I do not answer to that human name and that human description. And I cannot be moved by human desires and human ambitions. I already have all there is. Now, as I meet those who walk in form, the I that I am is the same I that they are. What they know or do not know makes no difference in my injunction to abide in I. I must transfer my abiding in I where I am to also abiding in I where they are. Whoever I meet, I still must continue to abide in the I of them. And so I'm abiding in I in me, and I in him, and I in her. And I in the tree, and I in the river, I in the world, I in everything there is. You abide in I. There's no breaking of that abiding consciousness. No matter where your eye lifts you, there's still only I there. No matter what you touch, there's only I there. You continue the unbroken I. You're only greeting divine self, no matter if it's a person or a bird or a fowl or a fish. All that's there is invisible divinity named I. You're meeting I everywhere. You must move in this direction. And what else is there? Nothing. Only I. What qualities are there? Only the qualities of I. Whatever qualities are of God are there, and there are no others, no matter what appears. And that is your test. Can you walk abiding in I? Can you abide in the qualities of I without opposite? Can you look at imperfection and know, because I am there, imperfection cannot coexist with I, the Spirit of God. Therefore, imperfection is a world mirage. Death is a world mirage. Sickness is a world mirage, because I am abiding in I, the Spirit of God which is there. I'm abiding in I, the Spirit of God which is here. And then you watch the quiet way in which healings occur. Because all is I in your consciousness. That is what your consciousness begins to outpicture in the visible world around you. The transition in consciousness becomes a transition in experience. You are abiding in I, and the scriptural law is fulfilled. You do bear fruit richly. You are sowing to the Spirit, and you do reap life everlasting. You are not sowing to the material world, the flesh, and you do not reap corruption. Spiritual law is firm, true, and invariable. When you abide in it, fulfill it with fidelity, you find every activity that is promised in those scriptural decrees becomes your experience. All evil is wiped off the face of the earth in your consciousness. There is no evil power. There is no evil condition. There is no evil person or thing. Because all is the invisible spirit named I. Here's an exercise you may find very good. I call it turning off the world. In your consciousness, you want to reach a point where there is no invisible thief, where the world mind, the carnal mind, has no outlet in you. And so you go into an awareness of who you are. You are the self of God. There is no mortal being where you are. You are pure, immortal spirit. And therefore there is no world where you are. There is only the kingdom of heaven. You are really accepting the robe of divinity without ands, ifs, and buts. and learning inside that divinity means perfection in all things. Divinity means this that was born is not you. Divinity means that you are not a human ego, that you are not a human body, that there is no human here. You see, in this acceptance, in this turning off the world, this is your crucifixion in consciousness, accepted in meditation. Here, there is no mortal being. There is only I, the immortal self. Your permanent self is here, your divine self. And your divine self here extends without interruption throughout infinity. It is never separated from that divine self which is God. Your source is ever present. You are one with your infinite source here and now. Nothing else is present except your one source self, the self that is you forever. You learn to accept this inside until something in you reaches a point where the world is turned off. You don't feel a world. You're not aware of a world. You're only aware of infinity, totally divine, nothing else. This becomes stabilized as a vast inner peace. Even the truth of it begins to register as an unconscious feeling within. If I am divine, and my neighbor is divine, and everyone is divine, then all must be the same divine one. And that divine one is the self of each one. That divine self I am, and I cannot be disconnected from infinity because it is the divine self. I am that infinite divine self until the truth of this to you is not a quotation but an acceptance within. And when it is, the powers of the world cease to be for you. When it is, you are inviting all of the qualities of God to flow in their natural sequence and express where you are. They reveal the absence of the desolation, destruction, discord, despair, disaster, and death that works through the false thief of the world mind. You find you need no power against anything. The world can say this can't be done, or that can't be done, or this is an obstacle. We're facing this kind of a condition over here. But when you register inside with this feeling of the infinite invisible self of you, all of the statements of the world about what can't be done for you have no weight whatsoever. You can break down any door without trying. Every obstacle is demolished. The spirit of you reveals that there are no obstacles. There never was an obstacle. They're all part of the mirage. Spirit of you reveals that you truly are in the perfect kingdom now. The eye is lifted, and the eye reveals the infinity of God's kingdom as a present reality. I and the Father. I abide in the Father, and the Father abides in me. We are one. And in that oneness realized within, I am free. free of a temporary lifespan, free of mortality, free of all the confining ideas of the world mind, free of error, free of false beliefs. For all that I has is mine. The world is gone.